Welcome to the Doggy Dojo. I'm your host, Susan Light, a Los Angeles-based dog trainer on a quest to become worthy of the title Sensei of the Doggy Dojo. Today, we're talking about a really awesome training protocol that is simple and easy for any family to implement with their dogs, Smart Times 50. I'm incredibly honored to say that the woman who created this protocol in her book, Plenty and Life is Free, is here to introduce us to it herself. She is an applied animal behaviorist who has been a full-time animal trainer for 35 years, first with marine mammals and now with dogs. At the University of Hawaii, she earned a master's degree as part of a research team which trained dolphins to understand sign language. She then worked with the United States Navy, training dolphins for open ocean military tasks. She has worked as a marine mammal trainer at Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium in Tacoma, Washington. After leaving the zoo world, she co-created Tacoma's first dog daycare. She launched Bright Spot Dog Training in 1998. Services include consulting with families about their challenging dogs and mentoring professional trainers who want to maximize the power of positive reinforcement training. She is proud to be an original faculty member for Karen Pryor's Clicker Expos. She's taught at 41 of these popular conferences. She's lectured at venues across the United States, Canada, and Europe, and in Australia, Israel, Japan, and Mexico. In 2012, she published her first book, Plenty in Life is Free, Reflections on Dogs, Training, and Finding Grace. Please welcome Kathy Sadeo. Kathy, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for coming by.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So I'm excited to talk about the Smart 50. I am embarrassed to say I only just read your book now after recommending it to a bunch of people.
Well, thank you for the recommendations.
But I really enjoyed it. And I guess we have to start with Nothing in Life is Free, because obviously the book is a direct response to that. Yeah. So do you want to just briefly explain to people what that is?
Nothing in Life is Free is this very sticky story that we use to educate, especially dog guardians and owners, about a supposedly easy protocol, a sort of a recipe they can follow to get some behavioral control and better behavior from their dogs. And it's got the acronym NILIF. So it's sometimes we in the profession call it NILIF, as if anyone would understand what that means. Nothing in life is free is what that stands for. There's a lot of different versions of that sort of big bucket label. What they have in common is that anything your dog might find valuable, anything your dog might enjoy, a piece of food, a scratch on the ear, a little bit of praise, a squeaky toy, anything your individual dog might value, they have to earn. And many of the versions of Nothing in Life is Free specify that the dog can earn those good things by sitting first. Some of the other protocols are a little bit more open in which behavior the dog will do on a cue or command from the human. But the dog basically has to comply with your request or command first, or they don't get the thing. And the different protocols vary in how sort of rigid they are about, does that encompass absolutely everything, including any little bit of love you might give your dog? And some of them would say, yes, absolutely. Anything is earned by the dog doing a sit or some other behavior first, or you are instructed to ignore the dog.
Which I think is a little bit rooted in that dominance thing, right? Like they have to understand everything comes from you.
Yeah. And yeah. It's such a kinder version. I mean, Susan, you're aware our whole profession is of sort of what a huge advance NILIF is from older styles of dominance-based training that included physical altercations with the dog. We would physically, when I use we in the most general sense, I never was doing this, but that the instructions to, you know, dog owners were to alpha roll the dog or to show them who's boss physically. So this sort of approach is certainly an improvement, but I would say we can even improve on that.
I absolutely agree. And I do know a lot of force-free trainers who still recommend it to their clients as a way to just get their training in.
Yeah, it's super sticky among positive reinforcement trainers and veterinary behaviorists. And I mean, the colleagues I most, you know, sort of feel like, gosh, we agree on so much and we want to be very progressive in the education we're putting out to folks. And I agree with you. I'm surprised how much this has sort of hung on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we just want to say that in and of itself, we understand it's not, you know, the problem, it's the philosophy, maybe, right? Why does the dog have to go through you for everything?
Well, I think there's something else that's a little more subtle. It took me a little while to realize, and can I list issues I have with Willis? We could fill up our time just with that, and that's certainly not going to be our emphasis, but boy, I have very specific concerns about Nilif, but one that it took me a while to really wrap my head around is sort of this idea of freedom. And my publishers at Dogwise, Larry Woodward, was kind enough to suggest the title of my book, Plenty in Life is Free. And that term freedom to me has a lot of meanings. Folks who follow Nilif protocols, I don't think they have very happy, joy-filled, spontaneous lives with their dogs. I'm not casting aspersions. I'm just saying I feel like sometimes it really constrains the humans to fully appreciate the moment of spontaneity with their dogs because, you know what, you just want to go up and give your dog a scritch on the ear because, dang, he's so cute. Well, that's not actually allowed in Nilif. So there's another sort of aspect, which is I sort of want the humans I work with to have the most fulfilled, happy lives possible. And I don't know, I think Nilif might get in the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's just a little background. We won't spend a lot of time on Nilif, but Smart 50 is an attempt to have, I love when you said sticky, people who haven't read your book might not know, or the book that you're referencing in your book about the sticky idea, something that's really sticks in the psyche, like, oh my God, dominance theory. Right. that was a sticky idea. That is, we've still not gotten rid of it after 50 years. But so Smart 50, from what I understand, is your attempt to sort of have a sticky acronym to get people moving in a different direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy, that's such a great way of saying it. Yeah. You know, I'm a real behavior geek. I love the science. We could go down all kinds of rabbit holes about the science of training, but I'm working with pet owners who don't typically hire me to say, hey, I really want to learn the science. And yet I really want to be able to pass it along to folks I'm working with, which I think is part of the sort of stickiness of Nilif is, boy, it's really a concise explanation of a protocol people can do. I would have some concerns about how successfully they can do it, but I wanted to sort of find something that could replace it because it doesn't help anybody to say, hey, maybe Nilif isn't the best idea. Where does that leave folks? So Smart Times 50 was my attempt to take my understanding of the science of behavior change and learning and make it as concise and sticky as possible. And so that word, that acronym SMART, stands for seeing, marking, and reinforcing. See, mark, and reinforce training. Because that's actually the three habits. Those are the three behavioral habits I want to start to build in the humans I'm working with. I want them to notice their dog's behavior. I want them to mark all the behaviors that they like. And I want them to reinforce those behaviors. If we can get those habits rolling in the humans, the behavior change in our learners can be really dramatic.
Yeah. And I love how sometimes when I'm first meeting a client and a dog, they're like, what are you giving them treats for? Like, what are they doing? What are you, you know, why are you giving them treats right now? It's like, they're just calmly sitting by us. That's great. You know, people tend to ignore their dog when they're doing things that they really like and really want them to do. They're ignoring that and they're focusing on all the things and their dogs are doing that they don't like.
Our attention is so limited. We're so busy. And, you know, even before the world got crazier with COVID and all the changes we've had to absorb, the reality is our human attention is limited. And we really have to make an intention to notice the non-obnoxious behaviors, right? We just want to disturb the dog when they're, my dog is currently sound asleep next to me as I'm chatting with you. And I'm really grateful for that. But boy, he's sound asleep next to me on the bed while I'm talking to the computer, because I've reinforced that sort of really calm behavior a lot in his younger days. So it's that behavior that isn't really intrusive that we want to go, wow, I really like that. I could actually pay for that sort of lying there calmly behavior, right?
Absolutely. And these are the kinds of things that people don't focus on, but it's a great shift. So you already said what SMART stands for, but what is SMART times 50? How does somebody do this?
You know, I wanted to kind of have a number to say, you know, I think people sometimes like to collect data in a really simple way. So if you give someone, and you know this, Susan, if you say, we're going to collect data on your dog's behavior and I'm giving you a data collection sheet, like eyes glaze over for most of the folks mm-hmm. we're working with, right? Yeah. But we really do need to have a quantity in there. And so I was inspired by my own Fitbit to say, I have a really strong habit of walking. And it's partly built up by my wanting to get to my number of steps I've programmed into my Fitbit every day. My friend with an Apple Watch loves to make those circles connect on her activity monitor and really will do behaviors in order to reach that goal each day. Mm-hmm. So I picked a number. This is not a science-based number. This is a number after talking to lots of folks to say, what might be aspirational and yet doable. And so SMART times 50 means I'd love for each learner whose behavior you want to impact. Sometimes I just work with a client on Zoom this morning who has three dogs. She lives in Alaska. We're talking on Zoom. I live in Washington State. And she talks to me about the two dogs whose behavior she's concerned about. And then she says, and my third dog, Freya, well, she's just perfect. I'm like, great. You could do SMART times 50 with Freya, but you're going to be too busy with it. So for dogs whose behavior you'd like to impact or change, I'd say I'd like to get in 50 repetitions a day of seeing, marking, and reinforcing any behavior that's okay or better than usual. It doesn't have to be the stunning behaviors. It's behaviors you like. And what's going to happen as you get these repetitions in day after day is the dog's behavioral repertoire will shift and you're going to start to be more discriminating possibly about what it is you're going to reinforce, because things are likely to be getting better as you're paying attention to three behaviors you want to focus on, five behaviors. It depends on the family. It also means that if you have three family members, each of you only has to do 15 or 20, and you can get those repetitions done in 5 minutes. So that idea of you're kind of keeping score on yourself, I like that shift in you're not sort of judging the dog. You're aspiring to get in some reps like you would with your Fitbit or with your trainer at the gym. You're going to do three sets of curls, 15 curls, you know, each. We know that. We know we're not going to get in physical shape without some reps of some exercises. Yeah, I just want to use that to kind of go, yeah, let's make this be a fun game and let's deliver 50 reinforces for our learners.
And you did say that if you don't see the things unprompted, because a big shift here between NILF and SMART times 50 is you're not asking for these behaviors. You're noticing them, right? That's the S, is you're seeing them, scanning the environment and seeing them, but that you're not opposed to you asking for a behavior if you need to get to the 50, correct?
Yeah, not at all. I love that you used that marine mammal word, scanning. I was originally a marine mammal trainer, and we would often use the term scanning, which is you're almost actively searching for a behavior. By the way, let me just put in the sort of, there's a sensory bias in us using the terms seeing, because I've certainly worked with many blind clients, visually impaired clients who do this beautifully using other senses. So you could say SMART is sensing, marking, and reinforcing. It doesn't have quite the same stickiness. So just, you can use your other sensory modalities to observe your dog, right? You're pointing out the much more important thing, which is The dog can offer the behavior because other things in the environment signaled it, not you, not any human. Or you as a human can request the behavior. That's totally fine as well. Both of those are valid ways for the dog to receive information from the environment about what to do. I like them both.
We're going to take a quick break. If you would like to know more about Nothing in Life is Free and Kathy's alternative, Smart Times 50, check out her book, Plenty in Life is Free. I've put two links in the show notes for it. One is for the print copy, and one is for an audio version where Kathy reads it herself. Her current project, a course called Lima Beings, is also linked in the show notes. We'll be right back. The important part is that counting out 50 reinforcers, for simplicity's sake, let's say treats,
yeah,
right? That's probably the easiest way to start. 50 small nutritious treats or pieces of their kibble, either, even because yep. You mentioned the goal is to avoid obesity with the dog. So you may need to put a little bit of thought into how to get these calories in safely.
Yes.
For this dog, especially if it's a very, very small dog. I'm working right now with a 3-pound Brewer's Terrier. I actually have two clients that just got Brewer's Terriers puppies, and they're 3 pounds each. And as we're talking about, like, how are we going to – they eat 230 calories a day.
Oh, my goodness.
And they can only have 10% of that as treats.
Right.
Right. So 23 calories of treats a day. We got to figure out how to do this training. And they have those licky tubes.
Yeah.
Tubes of licky treats. You know, those are like 4.5 calories for the whole tube.
Oh, I love the lickable stuff. I think this is a genius way to, right, dole and out something meaningful, but limit.
Yeah. And it's not as easy to count. Like you did mention, mm-hmm. You know, if you have something that's lickable, it's going to be a little harder to get that count of 50 and, you know, keeping track. So for her, I said, you know, that means that he can have 4 tubes of this a day.
Wow.
As treats. And that falls in that, you know, budget, the nutritional guidelines.
Right, guidelines. Right.
Yeah. So you do have to be mindful of that. You know, don't count out 50 giant cubes of bacon, depending on the size of your dog. But your first habit is going to be prepping 50 treats every day so that you can use them for your dog.
Weirdly, this is a very big part of it. I'm so glad you pointed that out because we really want to set up our own environment to make this doable. And so who in the family is going to help with that 50 tiny, healthy treats that you're preparing for tomorrow? I find that often tweens and teens are in the plan to go, hey, that's their role to get those, that food prep ready to go. But it shouldn't be onerous to make you go, oh my gosh, this is too much work. We really should make this easy. Yeah.
Yeah. But what's great about getting in that habit, and that's the first habit, is that then when you have that treat container in the fridge, depending on what it is, or on the counter or wherever you have it in your house, reminding you, oh, I haven't done it yet, you know, kind of keeping you in the loop, because everybody intends it. We're so bad. Humans are so bad at following through, right? With the things that we, like you said, the gym, like we all intend to work out. Doing it is another thing. So it's just easy to be like, oh, I met with a trainer this week. You get there the next week. I was like, hey, did you guys practice it all? Oh, you know, they're so busy. So this is a really great way. Like you said, it's aspirational, but it's also totally doable.
And you have this choice, which I really like. We know this, Susan, it feels really natural to us, but I feel like when I'm talking to clients, very often they're envisioning dog training as being a little bit like that gym session or like more traditional dog training classes where you're going to carve out 20 to 30 minutes a day and you're going to do your drills and you have the dog training session on the block on your day timer. That's how old I am. I'm actually using a day timer on your daily schedule. And I am not very likely to be doing those scheduled blocks of training. I'm much more dribbling out a couple of reinforcements throughout the day when I'm in the presence of my dog. And to me, that's a lot easier. I bring half of my dog's breakfast on our morning walk. To me, that's just he gets some breakfast in a bowl and he gets some breakfast on our long walk. And that feels very doable to me, that it's throughout the day just a few minutes at a time, it feels a lot less burdensome than another thing on your to-do list, which we can't.
Absolutely. I have tried myself to set alarms on my phone to remind me to train, and they always go off at an inconvenient time. It's not going to work. I can't do it. So that didn't work for me. But I love, like, Juliana Williams, she had a post of like, train while your coffee's brewing. Yes. Train, like, I can't remember her list. That one really stuck with me. It's like, you know, you have these tiny, tiny snippets in the day. That's all you need.
That's so funny you're saying that, because I had a few minutes before joining you for the podcast. I'm like, I can't start a project, but here's my 6 minutes I have. Where do? I get on social media and scroll. That is not a productive use of my 6 minutes, right? It's just not. So I could absolutely get on with Juliana's suggestion. I'll tell you one thing a client of mine thought up. I thought this was genius. She said to her kids, I'm going to put 5 little Dixie cups, you know, little tiny paper cups. So I'm going to put those out every day. What I'd like you to do is I want you to put 10 kibbles in each of those 5 Dixie cups. And I want you to hide them around the house somewhere where the dog can't access them. But then tomorrow, what's going to happen is we're going to come across them. When we come across them, when I open the vanity drawer where my hair dryer is, oh, there's a little Dixie cup with 10 kibbles. It's a reminder to me, oh, can I take a minute or two here to do a little bit of training? I thought the hiding the Dixie cups thing was really cool, and it made it be a game for the family, right?
That does sound fun. That's a great way to do it. And it's just what we'd love to get across to people is it doesn't have to be onerous to see results.
You know, if we took the science of behavior change, really what it would say, if we stripped it down to one word that isn't an acronym, right? If we really just could shout from the rooftops, it is reinforce. Reinforce the behaviors you like. That's it. That is the name of the game. So those seeing and marking, those behaviors that come before that, is really just the extension of getting in the habit of finding behaviors you can reinforce. It sounds not enough. What are you doing? How are you touching the dog? How are you controlling things? The reinforcement's going to do more work than you imagine it can. That's how we're designed to learn, right? So one of the things that comes up for me when I'm talking to clients about this, and it might seem second nature to us, but it really, a couple of things. One is, this is not a standalone procedure in that's all you got to do. Because for most of the cases we're called in for, there's some damaging, dangerous, destructive, there's some behavior that is a real problem. And in no way am I saying, just ignore that.
Right.
We have to do some environmental control. We have to do some restricting access to those behaviors that are currently a problem. So that discussion about temporary management that's going to segue, this is the important thing for me, is it isn't management that prevents the problem behavior 100% while we're doing smart times 50, and then smart times 50 takes over. We can just pull the gates and the crates and the muzzles and the tethers, all those things we may have installed to limit the practice of the problem behavior. I actually want to pull that management back gradually. So we're giving dogs choices to make bad behavior, do those bad behaviors, but we're skewing their choices in our favor. I think this is huge to be able to say, I don't want to be the police officer for my dog's entire life, telling them what not to do, guiding their every movement. It's really not my happiest life, and it's kind of a pain in the neck for me. I actually want my dog to be making better choices out of his own self-interest because he wants to get those reinforcers. So I don't want to neglect. There's a conversation around how we use management in the early stages of training and how we gradually fade that management out so the dog is making good behavioral choices without the need for permanent gating and crating and barriers. Maybe those things can be temporary depending on the situation.
Yeah, such a good point. I actually do think for behavior modification and puppies as well, there's 3 prongs to it. There's the training, there's the management, and then there's enrichment. Because part of it is also that you can't just expect a dog that's going to sit on the couch and sleep all day. I'm sorry, unless they're really old. They have needs as an animal, as a captive animal in your home, and you have to do some enrichment to meet their needs in some way. So I think those three prongs are vital to any plan.
You know, I was talking to this client this morning on Zoom, and this is hard to explain, but I walk my dog. I like walking. It's good for me for several reasons, but I also am so fully aware that for my 6-year-old mixed breed, mid-sized mutt of a dog, if we walk in the morning, he is a different dog the rest of the day. So that walk, we could call it enrichment, but I'm also going to say it's an antecedent arrangement for the rest of my day, being able to select behaviors I like. It is a really good payoff. So it isn't, I should walk the dog, or boy, aren't I admirable that I do walk the dog every morning. It's really sort of selfish. I really love him even more when he's had his needs met first thing in the morning, and it's pouring rain here in Tacoma today, pouring rain. That doesn't change my decision to walk one iota, because the walks to me are so crucial for being able to then have his repertoire skewed in a way that I've got a lot I can reinforce, right? Yeah. So that idea of connecting enrichment, meeting that animal's needs, allows us then to be able to say, oh gosh, we have a better, wider repertoire of behaviors we can select from to reinforce. That's huge.
Absolutely. And I love the way you said he's a different dog on the days that he doesn't get a walk, because that is how you can tell if it's truly enrichment.
Exactly.
The behavior changes. And if you take your dog on an hour and a half walk and you're like, and they're still nuts when they come back, mm-hmm. blah, blah, you know what? That's not meeting that dog's need. Let's try something different. Let's not try longer walks. Let's try something different.
Oh, it's exactly right. And you just described there this little bit of experimentation, this data collection that we do and say, hey, every behavior is the study of one. Every learner is an individual. Here's been my experience with dogs that walks can often be helpful, but let's see what happens with yours. So for the dog I'm working with right now, a young dog who gets the zoomies every night at 6, we hear this a lot, right, Susan? And yeah. So what I want to say is this is not a physiological, like it is grooved into the dog's brain. My suspicion is it's a really convenient time when the humans are finally sitting down that the dog can really annoy you and get a rise out of you, but the dog hasn't had its needs met all day long because you've been really busy. Yeah. So yeah. here's my ask for the clients. Can we just do an experiment? I just want to know 2 days that you've done a sniffy walk in the morning. Tell me what the zoomies look like those days. So that you can say to those folks, not in general, here's the rules for all dogs. I'm curious, what would it look like on those evenings where the dog has had a half hour sniffy walk? Here's a place where you can do sniffy walks. You don't even have to commit to it long term. Just give me some data on those 2 days. I don't know. It's a great way of asking, right? I think lots of your frustrations, the whole family, are rooted in, yeah, this dog is really different than your last dog, isn't she?
Oh, man.
A lot of times they're like, hey, my last dog didn't need that. I know.
I should put that on a t-shirt.
I've never had
a dog that did this. Yeah. I've never had a dog that did this.
Bless our hearts. Oh, my God, our memories. Our memories.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. One of the other things, Susan, that I talk to clients about is I have a list of behaviors that are important to me and my dogs. They are idiosyncratic to my life. I don't do competition with my dogs. And I used to give the canine good citizenship test for the AKC. And to me, those 10 behaviors are not my priority 10 behaviors now, that list. It's perfectly fine. But I guess I want to say to people, you can customize which behaviors you want. They can be serious. They can be silly. They can be what your family values. But I like that smart times 50 allows the family to have a conversation about what are the 3 behaviors you're all going to be on the lookout for? Maybe 2 serious ones, lying on the dog bed and coming to you when called, 2 maybe important ones, and maybe 1 goofy one like the dog doing a play bow or scratching his ear. I just want to make you better observers of your dog's behavior. And you can start with just a few. You don't have to make it be, you don't even have to make it be 50. If I say 50 to a client and their eyes go, wait, 50? Hey, start with 15. Just start. Yeah. Just start. Yeah. You're gonna be surprised.
Anything else you just want to make sure that you get a chance to say before we sign off?
No, just that I appreciate all you're doing to help spread the education of, we all want to do right by our dogs. That's what we all have in common. And so these continuing conversations where we can be curious and learn together, they're everything. So thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, for joining me today. My biggest takeaway from this conversation is reinforcement drives behavior. Get yourself in the habit of noticing and reinforcing behaviors you like in your dog. You also need to set up management and use supervision to maintain everyone's safety and prevent those unwanted behaviors, along with finding whatever enrichment your dog needs to be fulfilled through trial and error. But the training doesn't have to be daunting. Training and enrichment can become habits. And one way is to prepare those 50 treats a day and start getting smart. Remember, that stands for See, Mark, and Reinforce training. For more in-depth information, check out Kathy's book, Plenty in Life is Free, or reach out to a positive reinforcement training. They'll have ideas about management, enrichment, and training. Thank you for stopping by the dojo to learn with me this week. This is your aspiring sensei, Susan Light, signing off. You can find me at doggydojopodcast.com or I'm Susan Light LA on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. The music was written by Mac Light. You can find him at maclightsongwriter.com. If you like the show, you can support it by subscribing, sharing it with your friends, rating it, and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of the Doggy Dojo.